everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries and everything in between.
So if, like us, you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your other host, Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me.
As always, thank you for all the support so far on our podcast.
Please follow us on whichever app you listen to your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Murder, Mother and Me Podcast. And please share with your friends and write us a review.
But only if it's a good one. Right, everyone, because we love doing the Halloween special so much, we've decided to do a part two. Here are a few more interesting facts about Halloween.
Famous magician and escape artist Harry Houdini died on Halloween in 1926. Michael Jackson's Thriller is the most played Halloween song of all time. Bram Stoker originally had a different name for Count Dracula, but Gary didn't play well with audiences. Imagine Dracula being called Gary.
There's only... Would his name be Gary Dracula then?
Or Count Gary.
There's only one name worse than Gary, and you know what that is? Derek.
We're not talking about Derek the dog again.
So to kick off our Halloween special part two, I'm going to go first with the mysterious story of the man from Torred. This story has captured imaginations around the world. It's a tale that seems to come straight out of science fiction, a story of a man who appeared in an airport claiming to be from another country that doesn't exist, then vanishing without a trace. But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. It's July 1954. Haneda Airport in Tokyo is bustling with activity. International travellers pass through customs, business people move quickly to catch their flights, and tourists excitedly embark on their adventures in the post-war world. Japan is recovering from the devastation of World War II, and its economy is beginning to boom. Air travel is becoming more common, and Haneda Airport is a gateway to the rest of the world. But on this particular day, an unusual incident unfolds. A European-looking man, well-dressed in a suit, approaches the customs checkpoint. He looks like any other businessman, carrying a briefcase and several documents. As he hands over his passport to the customs officer, everything seems perfectly normal, until the officer takes a closer look at the passport. The country listed as his place of origin? Torred. Now, this is where the story begins to take a strange turn. The customs officer is immediately confused. Torred? It's a country he's never heard of. At first, he assumes it's a mistake, a misprint on the passport or a joke. But the man insists that Torred is a real country. He claims it's located between France and Spain in the area we know as the small principality of Andorra. The customs officer, still confused, asks the man to point out Torred on a map. When shown a map of Europe, the man becomes visibly upset. He can't understand why Torred isn't on the map. He insists that the country has existed for more than 1,000 years.
Hang on, this is a bit weird, isn't it?
It's a bit weird, isn't it, when you're looking for where you live and it's not there?
But surely he's made this up. Surely he's a con man.
Well, he doesn't seem to be making it up. He seems quite convinced of what he's talking about, doesn't he? He's as confused as the customs officer by the looks of things.
Torred, it even sounds made up.
Torred.
Or does it? There are some funny sounding places, aren't there?
Well, it's no worse than Andorra, is it?
Yeah, true.
It's a bizarre moment. One that leaves the customs officer wondering if the man is delusional, confused, or perhaps part of some elaborate prank. But as we'll see, the story only gets stranger from here. At this point, let's pause and take stock of the situation. I mean, a man just presents himself at the international airport with a passport from a non-existent country. It sounds a bit strange, doesn't it? A bit absurd on the surface of it. But let's just keep in mind that this was 1954. So the world was still healing from the devastation of the Second World War. Borders had been redrawn, new nations had emerged, and many people were unfamiliar with countries outside their immediate region.
I was just going to say, I guess the world had been a lot less explored back in 1954, as it would be today, for example.
Well, it's not like you can just stick it into Google and find out where it is, like we've just done.
Yeah, true.
You know, so I suppose at first glance, you know, the customs officer might have thought that it was just a lesser known country that he'd never heard of, maybe.
I mean, that it's definitely plausible, isn't it? And especially if the guy's getting like visibly upset as well, he's either a really good actor or he genuinely is confused why they don't know what he's talking about.
Well, my first thing would be if I was the customs officer, I'd immediately doubt myself and think it was my fault because I think...
Yeah, like, is this somewhere I've never heard of?
Yeah, this is definitely a place because he's so adamant that he comes from this place. And why would you turn up with a passport with that on? But now the situation becomes even more perplexing.
If that's even possible.
Well, it is. According to this story, the man's passport was not only stamped with visas from various countries, including Japan, but it was also filled with stamps showing his travels across Europe and other parts of the world. The document appeared legitimate. So he'd actually been to Japan before?
Wait, so he actually had a legitimate passport as well, or what seemed to be legitimate, from this country that no one's ever heard of?
Yeah, with stamps all over it. And he'd also been to Japan prior to this incident, so he must have said he'd come from Torred then, wasn't he?
I was going to say, he can't have just made this up, and it can't be a fake passport, because surely he wouldn't have been able to... Someone would have got onto it that the stamps were fake.
But hang on, it gets even more intriguing. His driver's license was issued in Torred, and other papers in his briefcase all supported his story.
So he's got a driver's license as well?
From Torred.
That seems legitimate.
Yeah. These weren't crude forgeries, they were detailed and consistent documents. This left the Japanese customs officials at a loss.
I was going to say, and these border control people at the airports and stuff, they're so thorough with their, like, investigations and the way they look into things. I'm assuming they would have known if something was fake on the passport or the driver's license.
Well, if it was a fake, it wasn't an obvious fake. It was a sophisticated fake. But, you know, the fact that they couldn't find this place on a map would make you think it was a fake. So, how could a man have a passport from a country that doesn't exist, along with supporting documentation that seems entirely real? Well, if it was nowadays, you would say that is a definite possibility. You know, you can do anything now, can't you? You know, you can buy things online, pretend you're a policeman, can't you?
Yeah, I was going to say that I think it's probably a big market in the crime world, isn't it? Fakes and forgeries.
Yeah, and what's that thing? You can go on the black web. Don't even say that because that really scares me.
The dark web.
Yeah, is that what it's called?
The black market. Yeah, but even, like, you know, people can make, like, you know, on your passport, you have these, like, translucent stamps now that you have to shine in a certain light to check if they're real, but people are even able to forge them somehow as well, so it's become a hell of a lot more sophisticated. I've seen that on CSI or something, by the way.
I'm a bit perturbed at how you know about all of these things, Josh, but
Netflix.
If you've got that thing as well, what's that money you use now? That currency, cryptocurrency, or what's that called?
Bitcoin.
But yeah, that's it, that one. Yeah, you can buy all kinds, can't you? I don't know myself, like, but I'm just saying.
It would have been a lot harder in 1954 to forge a driver's license, forge a passport, and at least make it realistic enough to fool border control. Like I said, either that or he's a very, very good actor.
But why, though? Why would you actually go to all this effort of doing this? For what reason?
Yeah, I suppose just to travel as well, just to get it. I mean, who knows what his motives were to be in the country?
The weirdest thing for me is that he's been to Japan before.
Yeah, and they've let him through on that passport, clearly, because it's stamped.
Yeah, but I wonder if it said Torred on it at the time.
Well, wouldn't it?
It's just, this is starting to hurt my head now. At this point, officials decide to detain the man for further questioning, as you would. They bring him into a room for an interview, hoping to figure out who he really is. During the interrogation, the man from Torred appeared calm and cooperative. He was fluent in several languages, including Japanese, and spoke in a manner that suggested he was highly educated. He explained that he was in Tokyo for business, a routine trip he had made several times before. According to his story, this was not the first time he had visited Japan, as his passport corroborated. His company had offices in Tokyo and he was there for meetings. When officials called the company he claimed to work for, they found no record of his employment. In fact, the company he mentioned didn't seem to exist at all. Similarly, the hotel where he said he had a reservation had no record of a booking under his name, nor did any hotels in the area. Yet the man continued to insist that everything he was saying was true. He even offered to show officials the currency from his country, bills and coins that appeared to be genuine, but bore markings and designs that no one recognised. Oh, it's making
me feel
weird.
That is really bizarre, isn't it? So he's even got currency as well from this place?
Yeah.
I mean, again, if it is a hoax or a con man or something, he's gone through a hell of a lot of effort.
Yeah, for what purpose, though?
That's what I was going to say, because he's not... Well,
he's not a drug smuggler, is he, or anything?
We don't know for sure that he hasn't committed the crime, but it doesn't seem like he has yet.
And he's been there so many times before. He's saying that his company offices are in Tokyo, but they don't exist.
And the hotel has no record of him ever booking a room.
As the hours wore on, the customs officials were left with more questions than answers. Unable to determine where the man was from or what his intentions were, they decided to put him up in a nearby hotel for the night under armed guard. They confiscated his documents for further investigation with plans to continue questioning him the next day. But here's where the mystery deepens. The next morning, when the guards went to check on the man from Torred, they were in for a shock. He was gone.
Yeah, of course he was.
Vanished.
Could have seen that one coming a mile off.
Where's he gone?
Back to Torred.
Oh, God. Despite the fact that the room had been secured and guards had been posted outside all night, the man had disappeared without a trace. The window was several stories above the ground, and there was no balcony or ledge from which he could have escaped. The door had not been opened, and the guards swore that no one had entered or exited the room during the night. The man's belongings, including his passport, his briefcase, and the documents that had stumped the customs officers, were also gone. Every trace of the man from Torred had disappeared, leaving the authorities baffled.
I mean, it's hardly surprising, is it? Because this is just a baffling story so far anyway. But if there was a guard sitting outside this room all night, it kind of does leave it open for human error, doesn't it? He might have fell asleep. He snuck out. You can't say for sure.
Well, yeah, but what about his documents that they'd confiscated? So they just vanished. So it's like when he went, his documents, everything just went.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, because they had them, didn't they?
And if he had his briefcase as well, and for some reason he's managed to get out the window or whatever, like I said, it was a couple stories high and there's no ledge or anything. What, he's jumped out of a window with a briefcase and still managed to keep hold of it?
The point is, he wouldn't be able to jump out of a window, though, would he? Because he was too high up. So, you know, as you say, maybe if one of the guards had nodded off or something, he could have got out that way. But why would his documents just, like, vanish into thin air? At this point, the story of the man from Torred becomes the stuff of legend. A man from a non-existent country arriving in Japan only to vanish from a guarded hotel room overnight. It sounds like something out of a science fiction novel or a spy thriller, but what do we make of it?
I mean, what I make of it is, my initial thought is, it's a con man. And for whatever reason, which is undetermined, he's forged the passport, forged the driver's license, forged the currency. But then it doesn't explain the things going missing and him disappearing from the hotel room.
Shall I tell you what some of the theories are?
Yeah, go on.
Because one of these theories is what I think. Okay. It's not what you think, okay? Over the years, many theories have emerged to explain this bizarre tale. Some suggest it's simply an urban legend, an airport ghost story, if you will, passed down through the years and embellished over time. But there are others who believe that the case of the man from Torred is more than just a curious anecdote. Some people believe that the man may have come from a parallel universe, a place where Torred does exist, but for reasons we can't explain, he found himself in our version of reality where it doesn't. In this version of the story, the man's disappearance is explained by the idea that he somehow slipped back into his own dimension. What do you think of that?
I'm not a big advocate for time travel and all that stuff, but I know you are.
Oh, I
So I'm totally assuming that was the theory that you agreed with.
Yeah, that's the one I agree with. If it's an actual real story, because we're not even certain that this is... Although, you know, when strange things happen, you know, the government tends to cover it up, don't they? And the authorities cover things up. So who's to say it isn't real? But if it is actually a real story, the time travel alternate dimension thing I'd go with, because, you know, there's a lot we don't understand about time, and there's too many documented cases of people having time slips and things, you know, temporarily. So who's to say that he didn't come into that airport like he's done a number of times before? And whatever causes a time slip, maybe atmospheric, you know, things, I don't know exactly how they're caused, but he's kind of gone into it for a while and then come back out of it, which would explain the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, even though I don't necessarily agree with that, it is weird that he was so specific about, you know, where it was on the map, that it had been around for 1,000 years. I don't know. I mean, it could easily just be made up as well, but...
Well, for me, though, the story is... The thing that convinces me is that he was coming to that country with a purpose that he'd done other times before. He knew where he was going, he knew what he was doing, but for some reason it all went wrong, didn't it? You know, so it wasn't like he didn't have a story or anything. And then he just disappeared, so...
I think the disappearance from the hotel room and the disappearance of the documents, for me, that's the weirdest part. I don't understand how that's possible.
Well, there's so many things we don't understand. If you think back, what, 100 years ago or whatever, no one would believe, well, I think it's a bit longer, but no one would believe about electricity. If you told someone that you could plug something into a wall and a light would come on, you know, that would have felt the same to them at that point as this does to us now.
Yeah, I suppose it's unrealistic until it's not.
But the possibilities are endless. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I see. This is so non-related, but I seen something on online the other day that said for every grain of sand on Earth, there's a billion planets in a universe, which means there's so much of the universe that we don't even know about. So what I do agree with is for us to think that we're the only thing living things in this universe is crazy.
When people laugh at that, I just laugh at them because I think, you know, how can you not think that though? How can you think we are the only things? Like this tiny little planet, do you know what I mean? You look at all of the galaxies and the universe, and is there more than one universe? This is just our universe, isn't it? That we know about.
Yeah, so. And even in our universe, we're just a tiny little speck, aren't we?
Exactly. And look at what's on our planet, though. We don't even know what's under the ocean. We don't know what's just in the space only immediately surrounding us. You know, so they're still discovering things now. So a couple of other theories are, one is that it was actually a time traveller that came from a distant year and came back in time to 1954, which is slightly different than the parallel universe theory. And the other one is that it was all an elaborate sort of, he was a con artist, you know, with some agenda, and it was a well thought out plan of his escape, which doesn't seem likely to me, but that's another one.
I mean, none of it seems likely. None of it makes sense.
It's just a really strange story. The case of the man from Torred remains one of the most enduring mysteries of the 20th century, a story that refuses to be neatly categorised or explained. Whether it's an example of an elaborate hoax, a case of mistaken identity, or something far stranger, the story captures our imagination because it challenges the very fabric of what we know about the world. If the man from Torred was real, what does that say about the nature of reality? Is it possible that there are parallel universes, places where countries like Torred exist, just out of reach of our understanding? Or is this simply a fascinating tale, one that plays into our desire to believe in the impossible? In the end, the truth may never be known. The man from Torred vanished as mysteriously as he appeared, leaving behind a legacy of questions that still linger to this day.
Well, that was a bit of a weird case to start off this episode, wasn't it?
Extremely strange.
Speaking of strange, what do you think your worst fear is? Now that we're talking about Halloween.
We've already talked about this, haven't we? I'm deathly afraid of heights, but I'm also scared of heads. So, like, as in heads in films, you know, if they're detached from someone's body. But if I think my worst fear would be if I was climbing up a mountain and there was a head.
That's a two-in-one.
Yeah.
I think my worst fear would be spiders.
Oh, get
lost. I know that's just like a really typical one, but it is. I can't stand them. I can't even look at them.
It's a bit ironic, really, that when you're about five, I've got a photograph of you dressed in a Spider-Man costume for Halloween.
That's different.
Yeah, but he's Spider-Man, isn't he?
Yeah, but even when I look at a spider, it makes me go cold and sweaty.
Well, you know what they say, they're probably more scared of you than you are of them.
Well, it doesn't look that way when it's crawling towards you, does it?
Not if your name's Josh.
Okay, so moving on to the second story of today's episode. I am going to be telling you the story of the disappearance of Brandon Swanson. On the night of May the 14th, 2008, 19-year-old Brandon Swanson vanished after his car went off the road in a rural area of western Minnesota. In the hours before his disappearance, he had made several phone calls, including one to his parents, telling them he had gotten stuck and needed help. But despite an extensive search effort, no trace of Brandon was ever found. But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. Brandon Swanson was just 19 years old when he disappeared. He lived in Marshall, Minnesota, a small town of about 13,000 people, located in the southwestern part of the state. Brandon was enrolled in Minnesota West Community and Technical College in Canby, where he was studying wind turbine technology. By all accounts, he was a typical young man. He enjoyed hanging out with friends, was close to his family, and was looking forward to finishing school. Can I just say that I've never heard of anyone that wanted to study wind turbine technology?
Wind turbine?
Do you reckon you just wake up one day and think, I love wind turbines?
Do you know? It's geographical, isn't it? I'm guessing he was good at geography.
Isn't this something to do with, like, fuel? The night of May the 13th, 2008, was supposed to be a celebration. It was the last day of classes at Minnesota West, and Brandon had plans to attend two small gatherings, one at a friend's house in Lind, about 7 miles from Marshall, and another at a party in Canby, about 30 miles away. At around 10:30 p.m., Brandon left Lind and headed to Canby to meet up with some friends. He spent a few hours at the party and then at around midnight decided to head home. He told his friends goodbye and got into his green Chevrolet Lumina, ready to make the roughly 30-mile drive back to Marshall. It should have been a routine drive, but as we'll soon learn, Brandon never made it home.
Here's another thing, isn't it? These dorm parties, there's always something weird going on at them, isn't there? So steer clear of the dorm parties. Kids, you'd always go missing after one of them.
Just after midnight on May the 14th, Brandon was driving on Highway 68, a familiar route that should have taken him back to Marshall in about 30 minutes. However, somewhere along the way, Brandon became disorientated. It's not entirely clear why. Some speculate he may have taken a wrong turn or missed a familiar landmark in the dark. Whatever the reason, Brandon found himself on a gravel road in a rural area near the towns of Taunton and Porter, about 25 miles away from where he thought he was. 25 miles, that's quite a long way away, you know.
25 miles away from where he actually thought he was.
From where he thought he was, so he's 25 miles in the wrong direction.
Well, the thing with these parties and things they go to, it's not like us, is it, where we go to a party and we get a taxi, it'd be like 5 minutes down the road. They're all like literally miles away from each other, aren't they? Which for them is normal, isn't it? But it's long distances to travel.
Especially if you're in rural areas as well.
Yeah, but to be off course by 25 miles.
It's quite a long way to not realise that you're...
It's not like 5 miles, is it even?
No. It's a long way to not realise that you're in the wrong place, basically. At 1:15 a.m, Brandon's car veered off the road and got stuck in a ditch. The car wasn't badly damaged, but it was immobile, and Brandon couldn't drive it out of the ditch on his own. So he did what most of us would do in that situation. He called his parents. If I was stuck in a ditch, I would not be calling you, and I would not be calling my dad, because you're both clueless.
Listen, I'd be there by that ditch trying to help you get out.
My dad would be saying, I don't know, just ring the AA.
Your dad would be in bed asleep with a migraine, probably.
True. Brian and Annette Swanson were at home in Marshall when they got the call from Brandon. It was around 1:54 a.m. when Brandon told them that he had driven into a ditch and couldn't get out of his car. He sounded frustrated but not panicked. He assured them he was fine, just stuck, and asked if they could come and pick him up. Brandon believed he was near Lind, only about 10 minutes from his home, so his parents got in their car and headed out to find him. The plan was simple. Brandon would stay with his car and they'd pick him up and take him home. But as they drove towards the area where Brandon said he was, things quickly became confusing. As Brian and Annette approached the area where they thought Brandon's car would be, they didn't see any sign of him. No car, no lights, no Brandon. They called him back, trying to get a better idea of where he might be. Brandon described his surroundings, telling them he could see the lights of a nearby town. Based on that information, they continued to search, driving up and down gravel roads, trying to spot Brandon's car in the darkness. But as the minutes passed, it became clear that something was wrong. Despite Brandon's belief that he was near Lind, his parents could not find him.
So that's where they were driving up and down by this town that he thought he was near to.
But little did they know, he was 25 miles away in a completely different place.
So where was he then? Do we know?
For the next 47 minutes, Brian and Annette stayed on the phone with their son, trying to locate him. Brandon became increasingly frustrated, but he remained calm. He kept reassuring his parents that he knew where he was, even though they were struggling to find him. So he was obviously really convinced that he was in the location that he thought he was.
Bit like the man from Torehead, really.
And to be honest, if I was on the phone to you and I was convinced that I was in somewhere and I was trying to describe it to you and you just weren't finding me, I'd be getting frustrated as well, because I know what you're like with directions.
But couldn't he have got back into the car and, like, beeped the horn and stuff?
Well, I would imagine he was probably doing stuff like that, beeping the horn, flashing his lights. That's what I'd be doing. I don't think I'd get out the car if it was dark, to be honest, because what's the point?
Did the parents not hear anything? You'd shout, though, wouldn't you?
You'd shout, and I think you're more likely to see a car than you are to see a person in the dark.
It's early hours of the morning, isn't it? So it would be quiet, and it's in the middle of nowhere, basically, by the sound of it. So if you were shouting or beeping your horn or flashing the lights, surely they would be able to find him.
But I think also at 19 years old, I'd be thinking that you were wrong and that you were looking in the wrong place versus me actually being in the wrong place and thinking I was somewhere else. I'd be probably blaming you and my dad. Eventually, Brandon decided to leave his car and start walking towards the lights of a town he believed to be Lind. He told his parents he would meet them in town. His plan was to follow a gravel road, and he stayed on the phone with them as he walked, updating them on his progress. At approximately 2:30 a.m., after walking for about 20 minutes, Brandon suddenly interrupted the conversation. "Oh shit," he said, and the call abruptly ended. That was the last time anyone heard from Brandon Swanson. That is creepy.
That's scary.
That is scary. Now, that could be anything, couldn't it? He could have fell over, he could have been grabbed. Oh shit, that's so scary.
Or did he see something?
That's what I mean. Why would you randomly just shout that? And why would the phone just randomly go off at that point as well?
And he's in the middle of nowhere where there's no... Well, he's on a gravel path going towards a town that he thinks is Lynd or whatever it's called. But the likelihood of people just going up and down there would be virtually nil, wouldn't it? Especially areas...
It sounds like it was quite a remote area. Imagine the panic and confusion Brian and Annette Swanson must have felt in that moment. One minute they were talking to their son, who was calmly walking down a rural road, and the next, the call was disconnected with no explanation. They immediately tried to call Brandon back, but the call went straight to his voicemail. They continued to drive around the area, desperately searching for any sign of him. After about an hour of searching with no luck, the Swansons called 911. By 6:30 a.m, law enforcement officers from the surrounding areas had begun a full-scale search for Brandon. But here's where the story takes another strange turn. When the search for Brandon's car began, investigators assumed they'd find it somewhere near Lynd, where Brandon believed that he had been. But when they located the car, it was nearly 25 miles away in a completely different direction, near the town of Porter. Brandon had been mistaken about his location that night, which only added to the confusion.
His mum and dad were driving up and down the wrong area, basically, weren't they?
Well, they were just going off his directions and where he thought he was, and I don't know what had convinced them so much that he was in the area that he thought he was.
Well, I mean, in the... What year was this? 2008. So, surely he would have had a sat-nav then.
I would assume so, but it said that the drive was quite familiar to him, so I guess he just thought he knew where he was going. And I think, you know, when you do drive at night, things do tend to look the same, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe he's just headed towards the lights and just got a bit off course and carried on, and it was the wrong town.
Yeah, I know sometimes when I'm driving and you lose a bit of concentration, you might miss a turn off, and you don't even know until you... couple of miles past it, and you thought, oh my god, that was my turn off back there.
And before you know it, you're miles out of your way.
Yeah. Once Brandon's car was found, search teams expanded their efforts. The area where Brandon's phone had last pinged was combed through thoroughly, with searchers walking through fields, ditches, and wooded areas. The search continued for several days, with law enforcement officers, volunteers, and search dogs covering miles of rural terrain. Helicopters were brought in to scan the area from the air, and the Yellow Medicine River, which ran near where Brandon's car was found, was searched extensively. It's a bit of a creepy name for a river, isn't it?
I'm gonna say.
The Yellow Medicine River.
Yeah, but we've just got the Mersey. It's better than that, isn't it? It's a good name.
Despite these exhaustive efforts, no trace of Brandon Swanson was ever found. So what could have happened to him? Over the years, several theories have been put forward, but none of them have provided definitive answers. The first and most widely accepted theory is that Brandon may have accidentally fallen into the Yellow Medicine River after hanging up the phone. The river was swollen from spring rains, and it's possible that Brandon, while walking in the dark, stumbled into the water and drowned. But despite numerous searches of the river and its banks, no evidence, no clothing, no phone, no body was ever recovered. Another theory is that Brandon may have gotten lost in the dark and suffered some other kind of accident. The area around Porter is filled with farmland, and the uneven terrain, ditches and fences could have posed a danger to someone walking in the pitch black night. If Brandon fell and injured himself, he may have succumbed to exposure before search teams could locate him. Then, there's the possibility that foul play was involved. Could Brandon have encountered someone after his call with his parents ended? Was he picked up by a passing motorist who meant him harm? While investigators found no evidence to suggest foul play, it's a possibility that cannot be entirely ruled out. So what do we think about all of that?
Well, I think an accident, if it was other than fall, let's just go, you know, if he fell in the river, I suppose I would think he'd be washed up at some point, or they'd find some evidence that would explain why there was no phone found or anything. You know, you would think eventually it might surface, but not necessarily. So that's one thing that could be true. But an otherwise accident, you know, something else I don't think is likely, because surely they would have found his body.
That's what I was going to say. I think one of the main theories that I've read online is this rural area where he disappeared from, it was filled with almost like potholes, but massive, massive deep potholes. And the fear was that he tripped and fell down one of these holes. But then I just think, surely they would know that and check the holes. and find the body?
Well, maybe the Heralds aren't easy to find. You know, maybe they're all over the place and they can't check them all, and they could check 99 out of 100 and it could be the 100th one he's in. That kind of scares me, that bit like a sinkhole they scare
Well,
me.
And also, don't forget, this was at like 2:30 in the morning, so it's going to be pitch black. He's not really going to be able to see where he's walking.
And everything would go down there with him. It's like when they have old mine shafts, isn't it? Places they're really hard, you know, people can fall down them, and half the time they don't even know they're there, do they?
What I find the creepiest part is that after he shouted, "Oh shit," his phone literally disconnected immediately, which to me says that it's been broken or it's lost power. But what that wouldn't happen if he fell down a hole, or at least not from what I think.
Well, you know what explains that, don't you? My favourite theory, a time slip. Oh, what about a UFO, you know? That would explain all this, like, electric stuff going off and things, so a phone would go off as well, so...
I think that probably the falling in the river is the most likely, because I also think we're in 2008. I don't think phones were waterproof then, either. Now, if you were to fall in the river, I think your phone would still survive, because...
And they didn't have, like, a location thing on it then, or
no,
anything,
they didn't
did
have
they?
Location access, and also, if you dropped your phone in water now, I think it can last up to, like, a certain period of time, and at a certain depth, it stays waterproof. Obviously, that wouldn't have been the case in 2008, as far as I'm aware, so that could explain why his phone cut off immediately, because it got water inside it.
Yeah.
And it could have washed him. Who knows where that yellow medicine river leads to.
Especially if, as they said, it was, you know, overflowing its banks, basically, wasn't it, almost?
So that, to me, is the most logical, that he fell in the river somehow, and he's been swept, and God knows where he is.
Well, sometimes those rivers like that are full of all kinds of crap, aren't they? And then he could have been lodged under something, and I don't know, though, because bodies, when they decompose, float to the surface eventually, don't they? So if they're not trapped by something,
it's just one of these mysteries again, isn't it, that we're never going to know. Well, not never going to know, but hopefully we do know eventually, but right now there is no answers.
Foul play, I think you can't rule it out, I suppose, but the likelihood of someone being on the same pathway, an opportunist that just decides to kill someone for no apparent reason, that's unlikely, isn't it, really?
I just feel like the term, "oh shit," lends itself to, like, if you tripped and fell or something, you'd go like, "oh shit," wouldn't you? Like, if you were stumbling or you'd fell or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the type of, I don't feel like you'd say, "oh shit," if you've seen someone, because you're not going to necessarily think straight away that they're going to mean you harm.
Yeah, but it depends what it is you're seeing, doesn't it? Imagine if a big UFO came above you, that's what I'd say.
Yeah, I suppose you don't know how you would react in any situation, do you? But I just think it kind of lends itself to falling. That's what I think.
I think, logically, it sounds like he's fallen in the river, but we don't know, do we? And I'm always, you know, open to other ideas, let's say, so, of a more bizarre nature, but...
And his poor mum and dad on the phone to him when it happens as well, and they don't even know that they're nearly 30 miles away in a different town, just waiting for him.
It must have been awful to be on the phone and hear him say that, and then, obviously, they know something's happened just by that one phrase, but not being able to do anything.
In the years since Brandon's disappearance, the case has remained open but cold. His parents, Brian and Annette Swanson, have been tireless in their efforts to keep Brandon's case in the public eye. They continue to hope that someone, somewhere, might know something that could help them solve the mystery. One of the most significant outcomes of Brandon's case has been the implementation of Brandon's Law, which was passed in 2009. The law requires law enforcement to take immediate action when an adult is reported missing under suspicious or dangerous circumstances, closing a loophole that had previously allowed authorities to delay action in cases involving adults. I didn't know that.
No, I didn't, but I've heard it before where they've got to wait so many hours and everything.
I hate that saying.
I know, it's because they're over 18, but really when you think of an 18 or 19-year-old, looking back now that you're older, you know, you think, well... I haven't got the sense they were born with, most of them. So if it's out of character for that person and the family know them the best, especially a mum and dad like that are driving up and down looking for him, it wasn't like he was just left and, you know, to his own devices, really. So I think they should take more notice of what the family say.
I think just touching on the fact that he might have fell, there's a bit of important information here, is that due to a childhood eye injury, Brandon was legally blind in his left eye, leading him to have depth perception issues. He had to wear glasses for this condition, but for unknown reasons, on the night of his disappearance, he left his glasses in the car. Now, we don't know if he left those glasses in the car on purpose, or whether, you know, as part of the crash, they might have just fell off his face or something.
He's not going to leave the glasses in the car on purpose. That doesn't make any sense, does it? More than likely, he probably dropped to the floor or something when he crashed the car, and then he couldn't find them because he can't see without his glasses.
Yeah, but then, well, yeah. So that makes even more sense to me that he might have tripped and fell somewhere without his glasses on.
Well, what were they saying? It was depth perception issues.
Yeah, so he can't actually figure out how far things are away from him.
He could maybe have even, if it was the river, saw the river or heard the river, but couldn't gauge how far away he was.
And he's just took a misstep or something and tripped
and
fell.
But, you know, the thing is, if he fell into the river and was saying all his belongings, whatever, you know, the phone stuff that he has on him didn't turn up, them things can float around for a long time or be at the bottom for a long time. It could be that a couple of years later that phone's washed up and someone's picked it up and not realised the relevance of it and just kept it. Or it could still be down there or wherever else Brandon is.
It also says that it was just under 40 degrees that night, so it's definitely plausible that if Brandon had fell into the river, that he succumbed to hypothermia, because that's pretty cold. Besides his car, not one piece of physical evidence ever related to Brandon has been found. His keys, his cell phone and his clothes have never been recovered.
Well, it's just like we were saying before, isn't it? They're still with him, obviously, but where that is, we don't know.
Wherever that may be, yeah.
It's just so sad with these cases because there's no result for the parents, is there? It's just that ongoing search forever until they find him and he may never turn up. So they've not got an answer.
What do you think happened to Branson Swanson? Branson Swanson, fucking hell.
He's gone from Brian to Brandon to Branson.
Right, okay, wait.
Branson Pickle. Porter Pickleberry's brother. Porter Pickleberry's brother. Oh, come on.
Right. For many, the case of Brandon Swanson represents the haunting possibility that even in an age of technology where cell phones can track our every move, people can still vanish without a trace. Brandon was on the phone with his parents for nearly an hour, calmly walking down a road, and yet he disappeared into the night, leaving behind nothing but questions. What do you think happened to Brandon Swanson? Was it a tragic accident? Did he fall into the river? Or could something more sinister have occurred? Unfortunately, until more evidence comes to light, we may never know the truth. Okay, everyone, so that wraps up our part 2 Halloween special. We hope you enjoyed the episode.
Thanks for listening and hope to see you again next time.
And remember, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime.